We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. Welcome to PHLY Flyers, presented by Mortgage CS. Check out mortgagecs.com/PHLY to start your home buying process today. Company NMLS ID number 1464766. My name is Bill Matz. I'm your director of fun and games for the evening. Joining me tonight, not only do we have the one and only JP Zapata in studio, but we actually have, perhaps setting a record for 2024, 2 days in a row in the studio, Philadelphia's number one hockey beat reporter, Charlie O'Connor. No dog mask tonight. No woo. A little disappointing there, but they did.
Almost.
They did. The Flyers pick up a point in their overtime loss to the Carolina Hurricanes in what was pretty decent preview of what might be the first round matchup between these two teams.
Yeah.
2-3 in the Metro tonight. The Hurricanes had a chance to catch the Rangers, but the Rangers won, so the standings remain as they were for now in the Metro. But just, I got to tell you, we'll get into the Couturier stuff in a little bit, but just the team on the ice, the response the last couple games, the way we have seen them play, it's hard to argue that they look like a more focused. There's not those, oh yeah, for 53 minutes they played well, but there were seven there where everyone had their skates on the wrong feet and nobody knew what was going on and they allowed three goals. Like, that thing hasn't happened, and it's resulted in a lot better hockey. And tonight, I think they went toe-to-toe with what might be the best team in the East. I mean, Florida's awesome. Boston has the record. But in the division, Carolina's great. They look pretty good against them, I thought.
Yeah, Carolina's now won 8 of 9. 7 of 8, I believe, since the trade deadline, since trade for Jake Gensel. So this is a really good team. I think the thing that impressed me the most about this game was I thought they started out strong. They went toe-to-toe with them in the first period. First half of the second period, same thing. Then they started to dip. Carolina started to do what Carolina does, which was just hold the puck constantly, cycle you to death. The only opportunities you have are transition chances off the rush. But Carolina had the puck for 80% of, in my mind, the second half of that second period. They were all over the place. And they go into the second intermission. They're down 2-1. And I was legitimately curious how this team was going to come out in the third, because there was a non-zero possibility that Carolina was just going to come out in the third and keep doing exactly what they did in the second half of the second, turn this into a 4-1 game and cruise. Instead, Flyers outplay them in the third. And I mean, this was not a repeat of the first when I thought the Flyers skated with the Hurricanes. The Flyers were the better team in the third period. They earned this point. They tied that game because they control play. And ultimately, after, you know, pushing and pushing and pushing and creating chances and creating shots, finally Travis Konecny breaks through. But this wasn't a case of they were just hanging around and then they got a break. They earned that tie because they controlled play and ultimately broke through the wall that Carolina was holding up. I did not know if the Flyers had that in them on the road against a really good team in Carolina with the defense core they have. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And then with all this Couturier stuff in the midst of everything too, I didn't know if they had another surge in them in the third period, and they showed me they did. And I was really impressed by
one
that.
One might call it a storm surge.
A little storm surge. A brief storm surge.
Yeah. Absolutely. First off, I want to say hello to everyone. Thank you everyone for welcoming me back. But look, you guys nailed it. Like, this is the type of performance I feel like you have to keep your head up high, because I personally wanted to see how they would look. Obviously, I missed a couple games, so I wanted to see how they would look against a good Carolina Hurricane team since that deadline, like you guys mentioned. It's a much better team. Obviously, listen, we'll talk about the Coots thing. Obviously, defensively, we're missing some key pieces too. But they hung in with the Carolina Hurricanes all throughout these three periods. And look, we would love to talk about two wins. I would love to see Bill in the dog mask, but you got to take away this point. Especially when you're talking about the playoff race, we were all watching some of the other games as well and those scores. But this is a hard-earned point, and we keep moving forward here, guys.
And that's like to see them kind of respond the way they have after the way this, you know, stretch of seven games started. The 6-2 beat down by the Maple Leafs, then the 6-5 game. You thought you were coming back. Felix Sandstrom really let you down. Like, shit just went wrong against the Bruins. Then you beat the Maple Leafs. Now you get a point tonight, and now you are what, 1-2-1, more than halfway through this seven game stretch. You have a chance to come out not ahead, but as well as anyone could have guessed you would.
Not behind.
Like, you're not going to serve as long as you come out, get one or two points over the next two, three games. Like, you're not going to surrender your playoff spot because of these seven games, probably.
And you know
you have to take care of business after that.
But you know, coming after that are a bunch of games against teams that you should beat. You get Montreal,
and Chicago.
You get Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, then you have a tough game. Well, maybe not even a tough game, but a game that matters a lot against the Islanders.
Four-point game.
Then you have a couple more easier games. So the schedule does open up, but you had to get some points. I came into this week thinking, and I was looking at it as the normal week. I wasn't really counting the Florida game. I'm counting the Florida game as part of next week. But I was looking at this as a three-game week, and so I went into this week thinking, if the Flyers can get 3 out of 6 points, if they can steal a win against one of these three teams and then take one of the other two teams to overtime, to me, that is a successful week. Not an amazing week, but it's a successful week. They've already done that. And this was a game where maybe they kind of had to, because we've talked about it. They can't seem to beat Boston. Something always happens where they lose to Boston. So I was never expecting that was going to be a game they were going to get points out of. They get the 2 points against Toronto, who we talked about two nights ago, might have been the easiest game out of this gauntlet. That's not saying Toronto is a bad team, just that looking at all the other teams, might be the most winnable game. They win it. And then tonight, they go into Carolina, a tough environment, a really good team, and they steal a point. And maybe it's not even accurate to say they stole a point, because it's probably more accurate to say they earned a point.
They earned a point tonight. Yeah, that's, I wouldn't like steal a point. I would say a lot of times applies to goalie made 45 saves. You got two shorthanded goals.
Yeah.
Like, I think that sort of thing.
That's stealing a point.
Tonight was a grinded out. Let's see if we can get this thing to overtime. Let's see if we can get this point. And then see what happens in 3-on-3. Before we talk about the 3-on-3 real quick, though, Charlie, I got a Toronto. Not Toronto. We got taken to task on Twitter.
I was curious, like, what was... I thought you said try.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Toronto.
You're apparently supposed to not say the T at the end of Toronto. I will continue to say that. If you don't want me to say it that way, change the way you spell your city's name.
It's really the height of arrogance.
Deal with it.
Really the height of arrogance. Like, no one from Baltimore is like, no, you have to say Balmer. Like, no, you say it that way.
Yeah, you're
but
wrong.
But I'm not from there.
You're wrong.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to continue to be wrong, that is your business.
Well, anyway.
But I will not concede to your wrongness.
Anyway.
I will continue to pronounce the city's name the way it is spelled and the way it is
Charlie
supposed to be
O'Connor
pronounced.
Versus Toronto.
I'll go head to head with Toronto any day.
It's been 8 years of this.
I love riling up Toronto people. They're insane. It's great.
It's pretty easy.
The 3-on-3, some interesting choices made.
Yeah, this is a reasonable critique.
This isn't maybe why they lost. Carolina considerably better, especially when you look at the high-end talent. Like, the Flyers have two defensemen they can play in this situation, both of whom might be a little banged up, you know. But Travis Konecny, Morgan Frost, Owen Tippett, and Bobby Brink were four of, if not the four best Flyers tonight. None of them saw the ice in overtime. Now, it was two shifts.
Yeah, that's the point I will make, is that I don't think they were all benched for overtime.
No.
They would have all probably, with maybe the exception of Brink, because who knows where Torts is with Brink. Great game. But I think at least Frost, Tippett, Farabee. Well, Farabee, I think, saw the ice.
Didn't he?
Did he get on the last shift?
TK Frost.
I think those three do eventually get on, but I think it's a reasonable critique to say, you know, maybe instead of launching with Paling Forrester, like his two boys, maybe launch with some of the guys who like have a better chance of scoring a game winning goal.
Yeah, I found that a little odd. You're trying to play matchups there. He trusts Forster to be responsible. Obviously, your checking center at this point is Ryan Paling. It's just like, that doesn't seem like you're trying. That seems like you're trying not to lose.
Yeah.
You're going, you know what? Sam Harrison's real good in shootouts.
Yeah.
And Freddie Anderson just got back. Let's see if we can get this to a shoot. To me, that's safe as death right there to me. And maybe, you know, Frost and TK start in overtime. Carolina takes it right down 10 seconds and scores. That easily could have happened, too. I'm just saying, I'd rather roll with my best players.
Yeah. I think generally speaking, if you want to give your team the best chance of winning, you generally should play your best players more. He's clearly doing with the defensemen, as we'll talk about later.
Oh, my God.
But Ryan Paling, while he had a perfectly fine game, I think he was strong tonight.
Yeah, he was good.
He did not have a better game than Morgan Frost. He did not have a better game than Owen Tippett or Travis Konecny. Well, Konecny was pretty underwhelming for the first two periods. Got the goal.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, putting Ryan Paling on the ice first does not give your team the best chance of winning, as opposed to putting a more talented player who actually has a decent enough chance of scoring a goal.
Travis Konecny might have more like overtime goals than Ryan Paling has goals.
Yeah. I'm not gonna kill Torts for it. It's not something I would have done. And also they lost, so he deserves some criticism for it.
But if we're getting ready for the playoffs, why not go all in for the win?
Yeah.
You know?
His philosophy probably is that was his way of going all in for the win, because he thinks we survived the first shift. I get my big guns out there. I just personally disagree with it. I would say it's kind of like how in baseball, where you put your best hitters at the top of the lineup because it means they're going to get more at bats over the course of a game. I put my best shooters on the ice at the start of overtime, so they have the chance of getting multiple shifts in overtime rather than just one.
It's like the overtime strategy in the Super Bowl where Kyle Shanahan was like, well, we wanted the ball third. And Andy Reid's like, well, had you scored a touchdown, we were going for two.
Yeah, so no.
There was never going to be a third.
There was never
going to
be a third.
Like, there was no third. We were going to win or lose on the 2-point.
Yeah.
Like, save your guys for the second and third shift. Also, what happens when they win the faceoff?
Yeah.
You know, like, small thing. This is not what we're going to harp on all night, but it's something that stuck out to me.
It's worthy of criticism.
And we've talked this week, like, when you have the opportunity to get points in this stretch, you really badly need them because they're going to be very hard to come by, as we saw in the first two games. Here was an opportunity. You got the one. You banked the one. Cool. Go for the win.
Yeah, you're playing with house money at that point.
Yeah, they came away with 1 point tonight. Now, Charlie, you mentioned, I want to do this a little. You mentioned he's playing his best defenseman. Is he playing his best forwards right now?
Is this a transition into Strongaturian?
Yeah, I don't want to wait till the end of the show to do Coots. Now, like I said at the top, it's hard to argue this move hasn't had the desired impact on the rest of the team, which I think was a big part of it.
Yeah.
We said the captain.
In terms of short-term impact, this is exactly what Tortorella wanted out of scratching Sean Couturier. He's got the attention of the team, and he has jolted them back into playing the way he wants them to play. That's undeniable. They're playing much better than they were playing before the scratch as a team. Absolutely.
That said,
undeniable.
Nick Deslauriers is in the lineup tonight for 3 minutes and 44 seconds. If you blinked, you missed it.
Big minutes.
No points.
Big minutes for D'Lo.
No points, no shots on goal, one hit. You can't. If you want to make the argument, okay, against Toronto,
yeah, Toronto
against the Leaves, they have Ryan Reeves. Should they call him Ryan Reeves anyway? We need D'Lo in case something happens. He can fight Ryan Reeves.
And he did.
Who is he? And he did. Who's he going with on Carolina?
Carolina's like the anti-fighting
team. Rob Brendamore might be the only likely matchup for Nick Deslauriers. Like,
Brendamore might win. And that's not me shitting on Deslauriers. Have you seen Rob Brendamore?
Brendamore might win a fight with a fucking jacked truck. I get you're trying to send a message to Sean Couturier. This is not about Nick Deslauriers. It's not about the role he plays, fourth line minutes. Trying to get points, though, right? I'm not saying Couturier's been at the top of his game for the last couple of weeks, last 2 months, whatever you want to call it. Having him on the ice gives you a better chance to win
than having Nick Deslauriers
than
on
Nick
the ice.
Deslauriers for 3 minutes and 44 seconds.
Indeed. Indeed, it does.
You went shorthanded against one of the best teams in the East. You got 1 point. You can't tell me Sean Couturier's present might not have been worth one other point.
Yeah, there was a moment, I think it was at the end of the second period, and you just see, like Jim Jackson is trying so hard to be diplomatic here about this Couturier thing.
And it's Deslauriers.
But the best was when it was, like, near the end of the second period, I believe, and I forget who it was. One of Carolina's better. I think it was Jordan Staal, because he's such a good faceoff guy. And he goes out for a faceoff, and JJ basically is like, well, the Flyers don't have anybody on the roster who has over a 50% faceoff percentage to take this one, or anybody in the lineup. And it was very much like, well, they do have somebody on the roster, but he ain't playing because the coach is doing a torts. That was very funny. Look, in the end, Couturier is obviously better than Nick Deslauriers. We talked about this on our show yesterday about the fact that Torts can say all he wants that, well, I'm just putting the 12 best guys on the ice, 12 best forwards. You're not. Everybody knows you're not. Like, you're not. We know that you're lying because you're not that delusional. If you are that delusional, then you should retire right now because there's no way that's actually true. He knows that Couturier is better than those guys. I was surprised he scratched him for a second game. I was surprised we got the second game. The first one, like, that's the we're making a point scratch. The second one, that almost tells me that, like, he feels like he didn't get the desired effect on Couturier, because he got the desired effect on the team. The team played harder against Toronto. They win the game. The fact that Couturier sits a second game tells me that he hasn't had the conversation with Couturier that he wants to have with him yet. And he feels like the point that he's trying to make to Couturier has not yet gotten through. So he's going to continue to sit until it gets through. That's my guess.
Yeah.
Because I don't know any other reason why, unless you're just going with the bullshit old school coach mentality.
We
can't change the lineup, which, like, he's changed the lineup this season after wins.
He scratched Brink Morgan back Frost in after wins. Yeah. I think Brink.
Yeah. Point, like, he's gotten Brink back in after a big win earlier on in the year.
Yeah.
That is not the precedent, the hard, fast precedent. He's at Sean Couturier again because he wanted to say Sean Couturier again because he feels like whatever point he's trying to make has not yet been fully made.
I'm with you. The first game I understood. Tonight is where I had a head scratch. And you brought up the real good point, like Deslauriers over Coots. Like, that one doesn't make sense. But you brought up a really good tweet today, Charlie, and that's the bigger one. Where do we go from here? Where does Coots and Torts go from here? I mean, this is our coach. This is our captain. And we're benching him for the second straight game. Again, first one, understandable. But on tonight, where you're playing against Carolina, playoff on the line, Metro team, you know, why not play him here tonight? So where do we go from here?
Well, apparently, according to our commenters, Brad Shaw is doing the post game. So Tortorella is continuing to duck the media.
All right.
This is wild.
All right.
This is wild shit.
Now,
this is insane, man.
I have to ask, Do you think there's a possibility? And yes, this is Bill being a wrestling fan. Torts and Coots are in cahoots. This is all a big fucking ploy.
What is it? What do they call it? Like kayfabe?
Is yeah, that, yeah. Like this is, they're feuding in kayfabe.
Kayfabe, yeah.
But behind the scenes, they're boys. And maybe like Coots is hurt. They're like, what are we doing here? He's not even addressing the media after a game.
I think, I mean, what it almost certainly is, I think. Number one, he certainly doesn't want to answer questions about Couturier. But I also think that he is throwing a little bit of a tantrum because he feels like the media is not treating him fairly in this, that they don't understand what he's trying to do and they're being critical. So he's not going to talk to him, which is pretty immature if that's the reason and pretty childish, but he's John Tortorella. He does whatever the hell he wants.
Can confer from the Flyers Twitter account, Bradshaw is doing the presser.
Like I have enjoyed, I mean, for us again, Charlie, we talked about this yesterday. As far as I'm concerned, this has been amazing. We're never not going to have a job. from a content perspective, thanks, Coach. But, like, what are we doing? Like, what is... He's just like, I don't care. I literally do not care. The president has my back. The GM has my back. I'm going to do what I want. Like, is that just what this comes down to? He doesn't give a shit?
I just have a question. Would he get away with
Charlie
this?
Charlie just nods. Like, yep. Like, what? I just... Doesn't he have to talk to the media, or is it a coach has to
talk?
Well,
I mean, I'm the PHWA chapter representative, so if they have a practice tomorrow, I will certainly be talking to Flyers PR about this and potentially getting the Pro Hockey Writers Association national branch in, because, no, he can't. Like, it is part of his duties.
It's part of his job, right?
Like, he can't just keep ducking people, and if he does, then there might be consequences, but that's something I'll deal with tomorrow. That's tomorrow's problem. Look, one thing I can tell you about John Tortorella is, and I think this is pretty much the case anywhere, no one can tell John Tortorella what to do. No one. Like, I feel bad for every PR department that has had to deal with John Tortorella, because John Tortorella just does whatever the hell he wants and no one can tell him what to do. Like, the shit that happened in Tampa where they told him he got kicked out of the game and he's like, no, I'm not leaving. Like, that's what PR departments that are working under John Tortorella have to deal with every day all season long. It's you tell John Tortorella you have to do this and he says, no, I don't want to. If he doesn't feel like doing it, he's just not going to do it. And I think that was almost, it almost came as a shock to him because it finally registered like, oh God, I actually do have to do this thing I don't want to do.
Well, that was, it became like,
this is the drama. This is the circus that is John Tortorella as your head coach. It is what it is.
It became like, you could see his mind like, I can't be the one who walks away, but I absolutely have to be the one who walks away. Like, whatever. Listen, John Tortorella, he's not going to be told what to do. But when you're trying to buy a house, you need someone to tell you what to do. Very, very badly need someone to tell you what to do. And for more on from our friends at Mortgage CS, let's hear from Charlie O'Connor.
Yeah. In terms of Mortgage CS, I think Bill and I have talked about this a bunch of times. We are homeowners. We did not meet. We did not meet the Mortgage CS guys before we bought our houses. But the spring purchase market's almost here. It's heating up quickly. And the thing is that everyone is waiting for the rates to go down. Everyone is saying, well, I'll jump in when the rates go down. The thing is, that's what everybody's doing. So if you really want to get a leg up, if you want to be able to have someone that you trust in this home buying process, it's Mortgage CS. Mortgage CS stands for Mortgage Concierge Service. It's a white glove service, independent mortgage broker based right here in Philadelphia. They're there to educate and empower their clients. They're there to help their clients obtain ultra competitive rates. And they're here to provide exceptional customer service. When you hear the word mortgage, think of Mortgage CS. Think of Ben and Alec. And hey, if you want to talk Flyers, they're there. Call or text Ben Stucker, the CEO, and chat about Sean Couturier and about when the Flyers captain will be returning to the lineup. But yeah, email Ben and Alec, email Ben, call, text Ben, check out mortgagecs.com/PHLY to get started. This advertisement is not a commitment to lend or extend credit. Mortgage CS is an equal opportunity mortgage broker. All loans are subject to credit approval. Certain restrictions may apply. Company NMLS ID 1464766. Visit mortgagecs.com for more information.
Dead on, Chuck. Way to go.
I tried.
Let's talk about some of the guys who did play tonight, because this Couturier situation, I can see this. I have like a list of things we're going to do in the offseason, Charlie. I can see the days we don't do those nonsense things being Coots versus Torts days. Like, that's just where this is going to go. Who knows? Maybe they are just in cahoots and this is all a big joke. But let's start with Morgan Frost. Ties a career-high five-game point streak tonight with the assist on the TK goal. He has been phenomenal, and there was a narrative. Now, I kind of believe this. Not so much. The narrative was that he only did what he did at the end of last season against bad teams. I thought whether it was a good or bad team, it didn't matter because the games didn't fucking matter.
Fair.
They are fake games, so who cares what Morgan Frost is doing in the second half of this season? This career-high five-game point streak now, though, is coming in the most important stretch of games and the toughest stretch of games that this team has played in quite some time. It's really hard to argue that this dude hasn't stepped up his game considerably, and he's earning this ice time. Like, part of the reason the coach can get away with sitting Sean Couturier is that someone has stepped up. Now, I would like to see both. Like,
yeah, right.
You can have,
why not both?
You can have two centers. I know it's been a long time for this team, but you're allowed to have two centers in the lineup. But Morgan Frost has been phenomenal lately.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that was an intentional pass to Konechny on the game-tying goal.
I'm going
to
say it was. I said on Twitter, I need to hear if anyone asks him after the game, let me know.
Yeah, I would like to think it was, because if it was, then he has a between-the-legs goal and a between-the-legs intentional assist within, what was that, in the Boston game? So that's two out of three games he's done a between-the-legs play. Pretty cool. It showcases the confidence that he has right now. This is a guy who is feeling good about his game, and it's really nice to see, because we've seen what Morgan Frost looks like when he doesn't have confidence in his game. He's just skating around, waiting for the play to come to him. What he's doing right now is he is making the play happen with his own assertiveness, with his own plays, by skating with pace, by making plays with the puck. I mean, I was watching, and he really didn't get involved on this particular power play, but they have him stuck in the bumper right now. But it's an interesting formation because he's touching the puck a lot in the bumper, and then also he's moving around. There's a lot of motion. But there were about three or four times where he's in the bumper, obviously the puck is on the perimeter, and he's banging his stick on the ice, basically like
demanding the puck.
Get me the puck.
Love that.
I have been begging for a player on this team all year to just be like, this is my fucking power play. Everything runs through me. And you're getting the sense that Frost finally, at long last, is starting to have the confidence where it's like, no, I am not going to be a passenger on this power play. This is my power play. I didn't care who it was. I just wanted somebody to do it.
Could be Garnett Hathaway.
And
they needed someone.
Yeah, and it seems like Frost is finally doing it. He's finally the guy. Not that the power play has been good. Obviously, they didn't score on the 5-on-3. But it just speaks to, I think, the confidence that he has right now. And it's exciting to think what Morgan Frost could be. I mean, who knows if we'll ever see this guy, but what Morgan Frost could be if he has that kind of confidence for 82 games.
It'd be really cool to see. And like, one thing I did want to point out as well is just, it's just crazy seeing the confidence that you're seeing from Morgan Frost ever since the benching to this point. You know, I was watching the pregame beforehand, listening to Tortorella speak to the media. And you know, even like hearing him talk about Morgan Frost is insane. Like, you know, trying to get TK going. So putting him on the same line with Tippett and Morgan Frost, because Morgan Frost is doing a good job getting the puck to his teammates.
Yeah.
That is crazy to kind of hear. But it's, you know, we always make the joke, like, you know, if you're in the doghouse, just get in the office with Torts and yell at him, just like Morgan Frost may have done. But it is really cool to see. The future is really bright. And this is what we're trying to see in this year of rebuild, seeing young players like this flourish.
And that's, I guess, why you put up with the circus that you forget, like, the every decision he makes, like whether it's scratching Coots, who he puts out on the ice in 3-on-3, who cares? You put up with the circus that is John Tortorella because of the success stories. Like, John Tortorella is now proud that he made a man out of Morgan Frost, a dude he scratched 10 times this year. Scratched him 10 times. Didn't believe in it. I mean, after the second half of the season that Frost had, he came into camp like, yeah, he was all right. He's okay.
He's all right.
We'll see what he is. Yeah, who's to say? And then like, scratches him a bunch of times. And now he's led the team in scoring since that day he was scratched. That's pretty damn good. Like, it's a success story that John Tortorella, maybe Morgan Frost would have become this guy with or without him as the coach. But it feels like he drug this out of him, and we're going to get the best of Morgan Frost because of it, no?
Hope so. I mean, they're certainly getting the best out of him now. The big thing with Morgan Frost, and this has always been the big thing with Morgan Frost, is can he sustain it? Now, he very well could sustain it the rest of the year, maybe even into the playoffs, but the same questions are going to pop up at the start of next season, because I don't think, unless they have a chance to get a superstar first-line center, I don't think they're going to trade Morgan Frost this summer. I think we will get another year of the Morgan Frost-John Tortorella saga. And the question will be, can Morgan Frost do it all year? Now, if you are a Morgan Frost fan, stan, whatever word you want to use, your argument would be he would be doing this if Tortorella wasn't jerking his chain all the time. Maybe, but he's still got to do it. And part of it is finding a way to get in the good graces consistently of a mercurial head coach in John Tortorella. Thus far, over a full season, Morgan Frost has not been able to do that. Now, that might be more on John Tortorella than it is on Morgan Frost, but it is a fact. If he keeps this up, I am very interested to see if next year we maybe can see this over the course of a full season, because that would be really exciting.
That'd be awesome.
And I need to point out about Frost tonight. He made, maybe he meant to, maybe he didn't, the assist on TK. The best play he made all night was the play that did not count. The play he made to set up the goal that got called back in the first period on the offside. That was a hell of a play. And I've just been noticing. Now, he has taken a few penalties lately.
Yeah, he's taking some penalties. That's true.
But, okay. Maybe it's just a little blip.
And you'll deal with it if he's doing all these other good things.
Yeah, if he's creating, if he's on a 5-game point streak and he's got 6 penalty minutes over the, like, okay, I'll live. I've just been noticing, maybe I'm looking for it more, but his play away from the puck and his defensive play is definitely much improved. At the very least, his effort at that end is much improved. But I've seen him make plays in the corner in the defensive end. I've seen him win battles. I've seen him get stripped of the puck and then come back and get it back. Those are the things that are going to keep him in the lineup so that he can produce the offense he can produce.
Yes and no. So, number one, I will agree with you that his two-way play has gotten much better this year. Last year, even when he was scoring points in the second half, his underlying metrics really, they took a jump in like mid-March. But for the most part, if you looked at his full season numbers, he didn't grade out well as a play driving forward. He just didn't. He was a middle-of-the-road, break-even type guy. This year, he's been a play driver. He's been a really, really good play driver at even strength at 5-on-5. The Flyers are significantly outchancing the opposition when he's on the ice. However, and this is where I have a little bit of a disagreement with you, he was driving play really well at the start of this season too, and Tortorella didn't care. He still benched him because Tortorella's opinion was, yes, he's gotten a lot better with his details. I love that. But if he's going to be in the lineup, he's got to score. And I don't think that's going to change. Tortorella has the idea in his head that Morgan Frost, if he's going to be in the lineup, has to score points. And it almost doesn't matter to him if he's doing other little things, if he's not scoring. Well, the second half he's scoring, so Torts loves him. I don't know if he has the kind of leash that will allow him to go on a 10-game scoring slump and stay in the lineup, because that's just the way John Tortorella views him. I'd like to think he can get that leash. I'd like to think he can get that, you know, that, I guess, ability to not be at his best all the time and not have to worry about being scratched the same way that Owen Tippett clearly does have from his coach. As of right now, he has not yet gotten that from John Tortorella. Maybe he will next year now that he's yelled at him, but we haven't gotten to that point yet, so we'll see.
Basically, what Charlie is saying is Morgan Frost is never allowed to chill.
No, he's never allowed to chill.
At no point can he chill when he's on the ice, which is why he needs to chill off the ice
indeed
with ice cold Coors Light. Listen, this team, these players, they drive us nuts. It's never going to end. This is just the way it's going to be forever, whether they're winning cups or they're in the draft lottery, everywhere in between. We're going to need every now and then to just chill, and there's no better way to chill than with an ice cold Coors Light. So whether you're freaking out about goalies, injuries, whatever, you need to find the Blue Mountains in your fridge and enjoy a beer as cold as the Rockies. Because when everything surrounding your favorite hockey team is on fire, sometimes you just got to chill. When you choose to rise above it all, choose chill, choose Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/PHLY Hockey. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Someone else I thought who played real, real well tonight, Bobby Brink.
Yeah,
they Bobby made a point tonight to really show the battle he won to get the secondary assist on, what was that, the Lawton goal?
Yes. Did he get a secondary assist?
It's an assist there.
Yes, it was secondary assist on the Lawton goal. Yeah, because he had that really good puck battle win that sets up Farabee
got
for the great
Farabee
one
for the touch
great
pass.
One-touch
yeah.
pass to send Lawton on the breakaway, yes.
Yeah, I am hoping now this version of Bobby Brink, who I think is the guy who made the team out of camp, winning battles, that secondary effort, getting in on the forecheck. I'm hoping that's who we see for the rest of this year, because I think the team is better with Bobby Brink on the ice than off.
Agreed.
Especially considering the alternatives. I have no idea what Denis Garionov is. I know I have more invested in Bobby Brink. His ceiling is considerably higher. And Cam Atkinson is cooked. So, like, I need Bobby Brink.
I hope he's not, but he doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good. They're in a playoff race right now, and the coach who's his boy is sitting him. Like, it's not great.
It says a lot.
It's not great right now. I need Bobby Brink in this lineup, which means I need this version of Brink to kind of come back, the guy we saw the first couple months of this season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would love to see more of Bobby Brink. When we talk about putting these young players in these type of situations, I mean, Bobby looked really good. And the thing is that he's shown flashes in every single one of his starts here. So if we can just get consistent play that we always talk about, and we always keep in mind that these are young players, but I thought Bobby looked really good on the Lott goal. I thought that pass to Joel Farabee was great. Obviously, Joel's pass was even better, but Bobby really started that play, and that's what Torts would love to see from a player like Bobby.
Yeah, I think that's really the big thing here with Bobby Brink, because what Tortorella has said on multiple occasions about Brink, about why he fell out of favor with the head coach, was the first time he said something especially negative about Brink, it was a road game. I was on the trip. It was after a game, and somebody brought up Brink, and he said, Brink needs to learn how to check. He just has no idea how to check. And what was that play we saw to set up that goal? That was checking. It wasn't a big body check. He's 5'8". He's never going to be throwing his weight around crushing people, but that is checking. That is, you know, using your body, using your leverage, getting in position and winning a battle with your strength and leverage. That's checking. That's the kind of checking he's going to have to do, not just to succeed at the NHL level, because maybe he could succeed at the NHL level without becoming a better checker. Maybe he could be a, you know, 45, 50 point a year guy, maybe, but he's not going to succeed at the NHL level on a team coached by John Tortorella, because John Tortorella ain't going to fucking play him if he doesn't get better at checking. And John Tortorella's made that abundantly clear because he sent him down to the minors. I mean, I know it was Danny, but the reason why Briere sent him down was because Tortorella wouldn't play him. And it was like, well, if Briere's not playing, might as well send him down so he can actually play. So this was a big step, I feel like, for Brink in that, yes, he had an impactful game. I thought it was a really good game all around. He was one of the better players on the ice in my mind for the Flyers. But he did it, in my mind, in a way that will make John Tortorella feel like he's getting through to Brink in the way he wants to get through. It's like how with Sanheim at the beginning of this year. All last year, Tortorella was yelling at Sanheim to be more assertive, carry the puck, use your skating. And then the first month and a half of the season, that's all Sanheim was doing. And Tortorella thought he was the greatest thing since sliced bread, because it wasn't just that Sanheim was scoring and playing better. He was scoring and playing better by doing exactly what John Tortorella had yelled at him to do. To me, that's what Brink did tonight. So I'd like to think, you never know what John Tortorella, again, said this 2 days ago or yesterday. Don't want to put myself in the head of John Tortorella, because that is a scary proposition. It's just a brain filled with torture devices and puppies. But But it seems to me that this is a situation where he would love what he saw in Brink because it's exactly what he wanted from Brink.
Charlie, you just really put an image in our heads. Right.
The torture devices and the puppies are separate.
Yes. No.
The puppies are not in the
puppies are happily running around playing
on a farm.
Yes.
Like the farm your parents tell you they took the dog to. That's actually the farm in his head where the puppies are, and the torture device is separate.
Well, what it is there's a bunch of people, like humans, that are miserable, and the dogs are extremely happy.
Yeah, and he's pumped about
that
it.
That is like, we're talking about like, I'm sure everybody, most people have seen the movie Happy Gilmore, where it's everyone like, get in your happy place.
Yeah.
His happy place is like humans being miserable and dogs being really happy.
Yeah, just like. Yeah, like people giving him the finger.
Yes, yes.
Like directed at him.
Yeah. And then a bunch of dogs just like having the time of their friggin' lives.
I want to talk about Cam York in a second, and I'm going to set it up with, now, York played 29 minutes, was -3. He's been real good. Listen, he played half the game. Sanheim clearly dealing with something. He doesn't practice anymore. Anthony DeMarco reporting hearing PHI, hearing Phillies has signed Hunter McDonald to an ELC. Oh,
that doesn't shock me. I guess Northeastern season's done. They are extremely high on Hunter McDonald.
They are extremely high on Hunter McDonald. Reinforcements?
I guess I can't put it past them. They really
the amount they've taught.
They really like this guy.
I ask these questions of you sometimes as a joke, but considering how often he has come up unprompted from multiple members of this front office, current and previous regime. They like this
dude. I don't think there's much concern on their part about Hunter McDonald's physical readiness. He's old for his for his draft class. He was an older draft pick.
Yeah.
They didn't draft him at 18. So he's not young in the sense of like the other players that were taken in his draft year. He's huge. He's really strong. I mean, look, putting me on the spot,
I do not necessarily
expect that they are going to throw him right into the NHL. However, like, it's not the craziest thing they've done just this week.
You know, that's a great point. He's 6'4", 205, 21 years old. He's almost 22, so he's a little older.
Yeah, he wasn't taken at age 18.
I wonder if he were, this is just me making shit up, if he were to draw into this lineup at some point, it's the Rangers.
Oh, you want to put him in against Rempe?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's just me throwing something against the wall. Jonesy, think
about
it.
What are you doing over there, Bill?
Now Cam York. Let's get back to the defensemen who are actually going to play.
Okay.
And who are playing.
Okay.
Cam York, I guess not. Like, you're -3, probably not your strongest game. Also, is a really tough opponent. And it is what it is.
Yeah, and also, and like, 3-on-3, like,
Travis
whatever.
Sanheim doesn't practice anymore. He's clearly dealing with something.
Yeah, he's banged up.
They have 1.5 defensemen.
Yeah.
Like, I guess Zamula counts as a guy. Like, he's been in the NHL all year, so I'll count him, but he's like a third pair dude playing second pair minutes right now. I've been impressed overall with what we've seen out of York lately, but I don't even know if anything was really his fault tonight. Like, they're just going to run this guy into the ground? Like, let's see how it goes, see what he can handle?
I guess. And I'm curious how he's going to hold up, because they are giving him a ton of ice time. I mean, he's playing half the game. This is playoff-style workload. And I get that they're in a playoff race, but this isn't ideal. He's young. I guess he can handle it. But this is like what they were doing to Chris Pronger and Kimmo Tiimonen in the 2010 playoffs.
Like, we don't have a third pair. Good luck.
So you're just playing half the game.
Yeah.
Godspeed. It's not ideal, but they clearly don't trust
anyone else.
Two-thirds of their defense.
Now, you look at the ice time distribution. It's not only that York played 29-01 and Sanheim played 26-31 tonight. It's that the next guy after them is Igor Zamula, and he played 16:04.
Yeah.
Nobody else played over 16. Like, they have 2 third pairs and 2 dudes who are just going to play until they can't anymore. There was one shift where you saw Sanheim get off the ice. Like, the camera followed him.
Yeah.
He sat down. Water, get your ass back out there, kid. Like, the defense just is what it is. And I guess that's – Is that the most impressive part about them hanging, clinging on? Like, they're holding on for dear life right now, and, you know, they just beat the Leafs. They took the Canes to overtime tonight. We'll see how this weekend goes. Is the most impressive part of this stretch of games that they're surviving without an NHL defense?
Kind of feels like we're hanging on by a little bit of super glue. It's crazy. We had like eight defensemen like before the deadline.
Everybody got hurt. Remember, and then they traded Sean Walker.
Remember when they were playing 11 forwards? Because it's like, we have so many defensemen, we can't sit them all.
Can we ask the comment section, do you guys miss the 11 and 7? Like, where are we at with
that? I mean,
that?
They're still going with 11 right now with true. Nick Delorier.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Unfortunately, they have no defense.
And what's funny is, like, I would say, like, Eric Johnson looked really good, too.
I thought he had a good game tonight.
But obviously you're not going to put him out there for 20 minutes.
No, he can't handle that. Yeah. Not anymore.
He turned 36 today, 37?
36,
happy
I think.
Birthday.
He's 100 years old. Like, he's a year older than me.
But like, that's the thing. Like, obviously, like, you don't want to put out Cam York for 20 minutes. But, like, what else are you going to do when you, literally, like you just said, you have 1.5 defensemen. And Eric Johnson is playing really good, but, like, you now have to rely on Igor Zamula, Ronnie Attard, Adam Jennings. So it is very tough right now. But I just think that, yeah, it just that Torts coaching, they have been well-structured defensively. I think that's what's been holding them to this point. But this is really stretching with defensemen.
It is. It is. It's going to be tough for them to keep this up. But they're about through. They have another three games of this gauntlet. Then things open up. That's really all they have to survive. And then I think they'll be okay. Probably need to get maybe one more win, two more wins ideally, maybe three more points out of this. And then I think they'll be okay. Washington seems like the team they have to worry about the most because it looks like the Islanders are collapsing again. It looks like that run that they went on.
That was it.
That was fool's gold. And now they're regressing back into the team that has, what, 10 more losses than they have wins this year. Now we just get Washington, the team that has a negative 30 goal differential. That is something too about this situation for the Flyers is that I don't want to take away from the fact that they are dramatically exceeding expectations. The fact that they are in a playoff race, the fact that they are playing meaningful games and winning. This Eastern Conference, the bottom of the Eastern Conference, it's real bad. This is so much worse than anyone expected. Like, so many teams that we thought were going to be better. The Devils, number one. They're top of the list. But the Penguins, we thought would be better. The Sabres, we thought would be better. The Senators, we thought would be better. The Red Wings were a team you're like, hey, maybe they could break out. They might get in the playoffs for the same reason the Flyers will, which is because all the other teams stink worse.
Who wants it less?
No, it's really, really funny to watch this Eastern Conference work out. Like, we were talking about this during the game. The Flyers, it appears, as with, what, 12 games left now, are going to finish third in the Metropolitan Division.
That's insane.
There is a really good chance in calendar year 2024, they don't win a Metropolitan Division game. Well, they haven't yet.
I think they're going to have to if they make the playoffs because they're going to have these head-to-head matches
with the
Islanders and the Capitals teams that are chasing them. So they're going to have to win a couple, at least one. But the fact that it is now past the midway point of March and they've yet to beat a Metropolitan Division team. That's pretty crazy. I did not know that until you brought it up during the game.
December 19th, they beat the Devils in overtime. That is the last time they won a game against a division opponent. They do have an overtime or shootout loss to Columbus in there, so they get a point.
Yeah, that was the game where they scratched Morgan Frost.
Yeah.
That was the leading up to the Frost yelling at Torts game.
You get a point. Also, it's Columbus. That's a loss. That's a straight loss.
Yeah. You lose to them in overtime. You might as well lose to them in regulation because it's just embarrassing.
Yeah. Let's take a quick minute to tell you about our friends at FOCO, baby. FOCO has the absolute best officially licensed gear for all sports and fandoms. Whether it's hoodies, jackets, beachwear, overalls, or velour sweatsuits, there's something for fans for almost every occasion. Maybe you're in the market for some accessories, toys, or collectibles for your Man Cave, She Shed, or podcast set. You've got to use FOCO for your team gear needs there as well. FOCO always has our back for Philly sports, and they have yours too. Get the best gear around by using the link in the description of the show. For all non-presale items, use promo code PHLY10, that's PHLY10, for 10% off at FOCO today.
Bill, I heard a little birdie in Puerto Rico told me that you lost another suit on Sunday.
Yeah, I need something. I got to get something. I was supposed to do about 15 minutes in the dunk tank on Sunday. I think I got to like 12 or 13, and Charlie's standing there behind me said, Chuck, you're up.
I would like to make the point here that I did probably more time in the dunk tank than anyone.
You did like 30 minutes.
Because I picked up your remaining time.
Yeah.
Then I did my 15 minutes, and then I'm about to leave the dunk tank, and the volunteer comes up to me, and she says, I'm sorry, the person who was supposed to come after you bailed. Can you stay in for another 5 minutes? And at that point, did I want to stay in for another 5 minutes? No, of course not. I wanted to get the hell out of there. It's cold, especially when you're not in the water. It's really cold. But there's a line of another 7 or 8 kids.
A line had really started to form as you were about to be done.
Yeah.
So you couldn't leave.
And they were all kids. Yeah. If it were a bunch of 40-year-olds, it would be like, no, I'm getting the hell out of here. Sorry. But it's kids. This is what the carnival's for. So I'm like, you know what? Sure. I'll stay in for another 5 minutes. I'm not going to name names as to who bailed. I will say, and I'm not, this is, to be clear, this is good natured, but I will say that it is someone on another competing Flyers podcast who apparently said they were going to do the dunk tank, but didn't. Uh-oh. So just know I picked up the slack when that nameless person refused to get in the dunk
tank. I love you guys talk about this like it's a penalty box.
But last year I wore the remaining pieces of the orange suit in there, and that was that. And this year I wore a St. Patty's suit that did not really fit anymore. Probably should have tried it on before the day I needed
love
to wear
that happens.
And I was like, I can probably survive like 15 minutes. And there it is. The pants ripped in a really unfortunate area. And I'm like, yeah, this is a place for kids. I really don't need to like have to tell my neighbors I've moved in everywhere I live now. So Charlie, you need to take over. So that's what happened there. Before we get out of here, there's one more guy I want to talk about today. Sam Harrison. Okay.
I think he was fine.
Yeah. The second one I really like to see stopped.
It was a good shot.
It was a good shot, but it's like, kind of a Briz goal to me when you get beat under the armpit.
Okay. Fair.
The overtime winner, like, he stopped the first 2-on-1. I don't know how many odd man rushes I want to see given up in an overtime that they like. This is now a skills competition. Goalie's going to let one of these in eventually.
Yeah, you give up enough quality chances.
He stopped fucking Gensel. Like
that, I thought that was the end of the game. That, you know, the whole reason why Carolina goes and gets Jake Gensel, we talked about it during the game off air. Carolina has long been the team that has the puck all the time. They don't have anybody that can finish. So they get the guy who's been Sidney Crosby's finisher for the last decade. Makes perfect sense. When he had the puck, I thought for sure it was going on. Harrison makes a great save. It's just, you know, really what this boils down to, if we're really going to dive into it, aside from the fact that Poehling starts the overtime, Joel Farabee has a chance to win that game and he misses the net.
Yeah, they had the opportunity. It comes down the other way. It is what it is. Yeah. Harrison finishes 30 saves on 33 shots for a 909. Not his best game, but I think another, all right, kid, you're going to get through this. Like,
I do think
you're coming back around.
But we've talked about this too, in that there are a lot of games over this most recent stretch where you know very quickly whether it's going to be a good Harrison game or an awful one. This was a game where, and this I think is actually in a lot of ways kind of a big step forward for Harrison, because he probably didn't have his best stuff, but he didn't let it turn into a 6-goal game. He gives up one kind of weak goal, and he helps the Flyers take a point from a team that is better than them. This is maybe the beginning of him taking that next step as a goalie, where you gotta turn those awful games into just passable games.
Yeah.
This was a passable game by Sam Harrison on the whole. It could have been a lot worse. He could have fallen apart after he gives up that second goal. Carolina put a lot more pressure on after that. He made some big stops at the end of the second period. That game could have gotten out of hand if he would have done what he did against Toronto, against Tampa. Instead, he shook it off, held down the fort, and then the Flyers come out in the third period like gangbusters and tie the game.
But look what we also just talked about as well. I mean, like 1.5 defensemen too, and Sam Harrison's expected to be behind the net there and just be Martin Brodeur essentially. So 30 saves off 33 shots, considering what it was here tonight. top 10 in possession team with the Carolina Hurricanes. And there were moments, especially in that second period, where it's like, get the puck out of the zone.
Yeah, a lot of failed clears tonight. Yeah. But that's what that's what Carolina does to you.
And so I tip my cap off to Sam Harris because I thought that was a solid performance. Obviously, like the theme of tonight is we want to get 2 points, but this is a hard-earned point here tonight.
It's hard to be mad at them after a game like that against a team like that. Listen, one week from today, it's one of the best holidays of the year. It's Philly's opening day, and you can join our crew, Jamie Lynch, Renee Washington, and John Foley, for a pregame live show and then watch party at Bet Parks Casino and Sportsbook in South Philly. I learned this today. That's the Turf Club. That's what it is. I had no idea it wasn't the Turf Club anymore.
Yeah,
that's
just what it
is. That's just what it is in my head forever. It's now the Bet Parks Casino and Sportsbook. That's where we're going to be for opening day. Our friends at Miller Lite will have 16-ounce can specials from 11:30 a.m. to close. PHLY will be raffling off some of our own swag, some Phillies game day stuff,
heck yeah,
all sorts of giveaways and fun times. You can hang out with our crew, maybe place a couple bets, have a good time. Who doesn't want, it's opening day. Who doesn't want to take a Harper opening day home run? You're at the sports book. You get the ticket. It's real. It's not on your phone. I love that. It's going to be a great time. Make sure you meet our friends down there. And while I'm selling you things, Die Hard, baby. Become a Die Hard because you get all this man's material. Right here, Charlie O'Connor, Philadelphia's number one beat reporter. You love him on the show. You love his free stuff. You want it all. You want 100% of Charlie. You get it by going to allphly.com and becoming a Die Hard. Do it. It's worth it. You also get access to our Discord channel and all everyone else's stuff, too. I don't want to undersell the rest of our amazing staff here, but come on. It's Charlie. Well, I like this. Hey, I like his work, and I hate him.
Hey, you know what? You're watching a Flyers show.
Yeah.
So don't you want to read everything there is to read about the Flyers?
That's some good stuff, guys.
He's got it. I don't hate Charlie. He rules.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Anyway, I think that's about it tonight. Do we have anything else on this game?
You got 3 stars?
Oh, yeah, shit, you're here.
Come on.
Charlie O'Connor's 3 stars of the game. Lead it off with star number 3.
So star number 3, I will go with one Travis Konecny, who I do not think had a great game on the whole, but I do think came through when he needed to.
I didn't even bring it up tonight.
Yep. Yeah, he got that big goal. Now you can stop saying he hasn't scored a goal
in a meaningful game.
In a meaningful game. He has. And it was a very meaningful goal in a road game against a team significantly higher in the standings than the Flyers. So I will give my 3rd star 2-1 Travis Konecny.
How about star number 2?
Star number 2, I will go with... See, this is when it gets tough because I do have to give one to a Kane because they won the freaking game. So, yeah, I guess I'll have 1st star be a Kane since they won the game. 2nd star is Morgan Frost. Great game. Fantastic game by Morgan Frost. Had that incredible pass, whether it was a pass that I don't know, on the TK goal. But he was good all around in this game. He was impactful. that whole line was dominant, I thought, for pretty much the entirety of the game against really good competition. You know, he is countering the assumption that he cannot get it done against top-tier opponents. This is a top-tier opponent. Morgan Frost is great. He's my second star.
And finally, star number one,
I'll give it to Seth Jarvis. He scores the game winner. Was he incredible the whole game? No. Actually, I thought the most consistent Kane during this game was Jordan Martinook. I thought he was everywhere in this game. But when the chips were down, Seth Jarvis beat Sam Harrison and sends the Canes to a win. So I'm giving him first star.
There we go. We get through the full three stars tonight. So that's it's a nice change of pace from the last time. but that will just about do it for us on PHLY Flyers tonight. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for hanging out. If you haven't already, you know the drill. Follow us right here on YouTube. Set those reminders. Never miss a live show. Make sure you're tuned in this weekend. Games Saturday and Sunday. We'll be here with post-game shows. Follow us on Twitter at @PHLY_Flyers. PHLY Flyers wherever there are podcasts. Pretty sure that's it. My name is Bill Matz. For JP Zapata and Charlie O'Connor, you have a great weekend, Philly.
See you guys.
All silly like the mayor.
You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.